All right, Rabbi Osai, good morning. Good morning. Let's begin. So today's daf is daf hey. We're actually going to pick up. I want to thank Yehuda for doing yesterday's daf. I know we got down to the bottom of the daf. We're actually just going to pick up a few lines up. We're going to pick up 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 11 lines up from the bottom with Tani Rabbi Chiya. So remember, again, the Gemara has been having an incredibly in-depth discussion regarding the nature of the Avos Nezikin. And we've seen already Rabbi Oshia's list, we've seen the Mishnah's list. So now the Gemara brings down another list of Avos Nezikin. So Tani Rabbi Chiya, the Chiya taught, Esrim Va'arba Avos Nezikin. This is on Dalet Amud Beis, 10 lines up from the bottom. Rabbi Chiya said that in fact there are 24 avos nezikin, 24 primary categories of damages, and they are the following. So says Rabbi Chiya, tashlumi kefel, the obligation to go ahead and pay kefel. If you look at Rashi on the first wide line writes, tashlumi kefel, imhimatze timatze miyado hagneva. If it turns out that a person stole, and ultimately the stolen object is found in their hands, so there's a halacha that says that they have to pay a double penalty of kefel. Next, tashlumi arba v'chamisha, if a person goes ahead and steals, Torah says, either a cow or a sheep, and goes in and steals it, and then butchers it and sells it. So there's a special penalty payment, ultimately, of arba v'chamisha, 4 and 5 times the actual value of the animal. Ganuv, someone who goes in and steals. Rashi says over here, ganuv, shemeshalim al piatzmo, ve'eino meshalim kefal ala karen bilva. So we'll say, so a ganuv, ultimately, we'll discuss this more in depth, but a ganuv has to pay, even through his own admission. He doesn't pay kefil, he doesn't pay a double penalty, but rather he pays keren, the primary amount. So we'll discuss this a little bit more in depth. So that's ganav. Gazlon, of course, is a thief as well. Rashi says over here, nami avu, so of course, the distinction between a ganav and a gazlon is that a ganav is one who operates secretly, usually under the cover of night, to the cover of secrecy, versus the gazlon, ultimately, who is the armed robber, a person who does not have to operate in any kind of secrecy, but rather uses force to ultimately steal the item. The edim zomimin, furthermore, edim zomimin, so remember, edim zomimin are witnesses that testify in order to create liability for a particular individual, are then found to be liars. And remember, again, through a specific formulation of Imanu Hayisem, second set of witnesses come along and say there's no way you could attest to what or testify to what it is that you're testifying about, because at the end of the day you are with us at that particular time. Sedim Zomim. So remember, Edim Zomimin have a very unique punishment of Va'asisem lo kasher zomim, that the halacha is you do to the Edim what they sought to do to others. A very unique reciprocal punishment. The ha'onis, we'll say onis is a man who violates a woman, there's a financial penalty. Ha'mefate, one who seduces a woman, for which there's a financial penalty as well. Umoti shemra, so we'll say moti shemra is a man who married a woman, and then essentially claims mekach tos. How does he claim mekach tos? By saying, I thought she was a basula, but it turns out that when we were together, it's clear to me that she's not a basula. And then it turns out, we'll say that what? That he's lying. Turns out that he's lying about that claim, in an effort to discredit her basulin. And then again, there's a financial penalty as there as well. V'hametame, which is an interesting case. We actually made reference to this in Ksuvis. Metame, Rashi says, is truma. Is someone who goes ahead and defiles the truma of another. Defiles the truma of another. So medama ultimately again is the case of someone who goes in. If you look at Rashi, medama says truma b'chulin. So mostly the case of medama is the case of a person who mixes in truma together with chulin. Now, what's the net effect of mixing in truma with chulin? So think about this in just a moment. Truma is not bottle. So if you mix in truma with chulin, the mixture is permitted. But it's only permitted to who? It's only permitted to kohanim. So the issue is, if you were a Yisrael, and you had this medame, you had this mixture of truma and chulin, you have to go ahead and sell it to. You'd have to sell it to a kohen. And because you are limited in the market only to a kohen, you'd essentially have to sell it at a discount. So it represents a financial loss for the individual. V'hamenaseich, we'll say menaseich is someone who goes ahead and makes his friend's wine. He essentially sanctifies it to avodah zara. So we'll say the interesting part of the case of metame, medame, and menaseich, we've spoken about these cases before, because these are all cases of what? Hezek she'eno nikar. These are all cases of unrecognizable damage. But nevertheless, damage nevertheless. So the Gemara is fine. So these are the additional cases of Rabbi Chiya. V'hani t'leisar, And remember, then you take the 13 ultimately of Rabbi Hoshea, and you put it all together, and what do you get? Ha'esem v'arba. We'll say you end up with a total of 24 different cases of Avos Nezikin. So this is Rabbi Chiya's case. There are 24 categories, primary categories of damages. Isa asks the Gemara, Rabbi Hoshea, my time alo tani ha'i. So Rabbi Hoshea, why don't you include these in your list of 13 as well? To which the Gemara says, "Bimamona kamairi, bikenasalo kamairi." Because Rabbi Hoshea, to which the Gemara responds, Rabbi Hoshea would respond, because Rabbi Hoshea is only trying to include cases of mamon, not trying to include cases of kenas. Now remember again, if you go back and you look at this list that we had, remember we've spoken about this many times in the past, that there are two different types of categories of financial payments. There's mamon and there's kenas. So how do you, meaning there's financial payments and there's penalty payments. How do you generally tell the difference between a financial payment and a monetary payment? How do you tell the difference? Good. So the way you tell the difference... Good morning, everyone. Come on, it's Sunday. It's like 8:30, 8:30. Oh, they thought there was breakfast. Okay. I'm sorry. Breakfast will be after the Daf Amir session. To work for your breakfast. So I'll say, so the distinction, remember, is... I'll let you go this time because we just started Baba Kama. I know you don't want to show up the new guys who are here, but... Get over the anibah. Start participating. So remember, so the difference is the following. Knas, or should say mamon, when you see a mamon payment, there's a logic to the amount. Knas is just often an objective amount that's not tied into any kind of reality. So for example, a man goes in and violates a woman, or a man seduces a woman, there's a penalty of 50 silver shekelim. So where does that payment come from? What does that have to do with anything? And the answer is nothing. It's an amount that the Torah went ahead and levied upon the perpetrator. Person steals a sheep, goes ahead and shechts it, and sells it, has to pay four times the value of the sheep. Where does that come from? So the answer is that's a knas, that's a penalty payment, as opposed to mamon. I go and I damage someone, so the amount of money I have to pay in restitution and the various categories of repayments for damages, those are real amounts that are tied into the individual who I damaged, his reality. So the Gemara is suggesting over here that Rabbi Hoshea only included cases of mamon, of money, of monetary payment, did not include cases of kenas, versus Rabbi Chiya, who included cases of kenas as well. To which the Gemara says, one second, Gadna v'gazlan d'mamonahu, listening, so why, so Rabbi Hoshea, why don't you include the case of Ganav and Gazan, because we also remember again, the case of theft are cases of mamon, are cases of monetary payments. So, Rabbi Hoshea, why don't you include those cases? To which the Gemara says, no, Hakatana, Rabbi Hoshea does include it. He just calls it something a little bit different. He called it Shomer Chinam v'Hashoel. See, Rabbi Hoshea, remember, Rabbi Hoshea counted the case of Shomer Chinam and Shoel, the unpaid custodian and the Shoel, the borrower. So Rabbi Hoshea does something very interesting. He includes under the umbrella of Shomer Chinam and Shoel the case of Ganav and Gazlan. How does Shomer Chinam and Shoel include the case of Ganav and Gazlan? Because Rabbi Hoshea, technically speaking, you could have a case where a person who is a custodian for an item, either an unpaid custodian or a borrower, then decides to steal the item. That's the case of Shoel or Shomer Chinam that ultimately could result in Ganav and Gazlan. So Rabbi Hoshea essentially says, I don't have to spell out Ganav and Gazlan, they're included in the cases of Shoel and Shomer Chinam. So I, Reb Chiya, Reb Chiya Nami Yahat Hanilei, Shomer Chinam v'Shoel, to which the Gemara says, Reb Chiya, so why do you have to go ahead and restate Ganav and Gazlan if indeed they are included in the case of Shomer Chinam and Shoel? To which Reb Chiya will respond, Tani Mamona Da'asi Liadei Be'atera, Vekatani Mamona Da'asi Liadei Be'isura. To which the Gemara answers, because Reb Chiya is trying to break up the cases. Reb Chiya is trying to break up the case ultimately of money that reached the hands of the individual Beheter in a permitted state or in a permitted fashion, and money that reached the hands of the individual in a prohibited fashion. So for example, the cases of Shomer Chinam and Shoel are cases of what? Are cases where the money reached the hands of the individual in a permitted fashion, but then the individual did something prohibited. Versus the situation where at the end of the day, in the case of Ganav and Gazlan, where the money reached the hands of the individual, be isura to begin with. Tap of hay. Eidim zomamin d'mamonahu, listening. So remember, we just said before that the distinction between the list of Rabbi Hoshea versus the list of Rabbi Chiya, that Rabbi Chiya includes cases of kenas and mamon, versus Rabbi Hoshea only included cases of mamon. So asks the Gemara, if that's the case, Rabbi Hoshea, why don't you include the case of Eidim zomamin, to which the Gemara says, Savalak Rabbi Kiva da'amar, Eim mishalmin al-pi atzman. Because Rabbi Hoshea holds like Rabbi Akiva, And Rabbi Akiva says that we do that Edim Zomimim, if they admit the fact that they are liars, ultimately they do not have to pay. The Rabbi said, now what does that have to do with anything? So remember, what that has to do with is the following. There's a principle by Knas. And the principle by Knas is Moda b'knas potter, that if you owe a penalty payment and you admit the fact that you own it, that you are exempt from repayment. That's a special concept by knas. The Gemara suggests over here that Reb Chiya holds like Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva holds that if Edim Zomamin, in other words, before they are officially made into Zomamin, admit the fact that they are Zomamin, then what? Then they are exempt from the reciprocal punishment. So Lemaisa, again, what do you see from that? You see from that that at least in Rabbi Akiva's view, Edim Zomin are really what? Are really a knas, ultimately, and not mammon. To which the Gemara says, Rabbi Akiva. So the Gemara says, if that's the case, I'm sorry, let's say that again. So Samlok Rabbi Akiva, Da'amar, Ein Mashlimin, Ein Mashalmin Al Pi Atzman. That he holds like Rabbi Akiva, who says that Edim Zomamin do not pay if through their own admission. Therefore, it's like a case of Kinas. And ultimately, again, Rabbi Oshia does not include it in his list. To which the Gemara says, Isa like Rabbi Akiva, List Nitre Gav Nishar, List Nishar Da Azik Shav, List Nishar Da Azik Adam. Oh, so if that's the case, that indeed Rabbi Oshia holds like Rabbi Akiva, then when Rabbi Oshia spoke about Shar, meaning the primary category of damages of Shar, so ultimately Rabbi Oshia should have split up Shar into two different cases. The case of Shar da'azik Shar, a case of Shar that damages another Shar, and a case of Shar that damages an Adam. Rabbi Oshia, now why do we need this distinction? Rabbi Oshia, take a look at Rashi. Rashi says over here, Rabbi Akiva, listening to Tregavne Shar, the other Rabbi Akiva, Yesh Chilik Bein Tashlumin Shal Shar, da'azik Shar de'lo Meshalim Elechatzi Nezek, le'tashlum Adam, as we will see in just a moment, Rabbi Akiva makes a distinction between one shar that damages another shar versus a shar that damages a person. So ultimately, again, if a shar damages another shar, so at least for the first three times, that shar is considered to be a tam, and therefore only pays chatzin as a calf damages, as opposed to a shor that damages an adam, according to Rabbi Akiva, will pay nezek shalim from the beginning. This time, because we learned, Rabbi Akiva omer, af tam shechava ba'adam shalim b'mosar nezek shalim, so to which, because Rabbi Akiva says, Rabbi Akiva, that's what? That a tam who goes ahead, meaning a tam is a non-habitual offending shor that damages a person, is Mishalim B'mosar Nezek Shalim. Rabbi Oshia, now there are two things over here. So Shalim B'mosar Nezek Shalim means he pays full damages, but not just full damages. Look at Rashi, B'mosar, Im Chaval Adam B'shar Tam, B'tam B'adam, V'shamu Bezin Chavala, Shechaval B'ashar B'adam Yosem Mechavala, Shechavala Adam B'shar, Mishalim B'alashar Osa Odev. So Rabbi Oshia, so there's, we'll see this case inside, but there's this case of the right word for it. Not double damages, but I guess reciprocal damages. Let's say you have a situation where a person injures the shar and the person get into a little bit of a tussle. Thank you, a tussle. Right? So what happens? Suppose that they both encounter damages. So the halacha is that in that kind of situation, each owes the other. Now, normally what we do in those kind of situations, I will say, let's take an easy case. The shor and the man get into a tussle, and they each damage each other $100 worth of damages. So what do you do? They call it even, right? But let's say, again, one of them, let's say the shor damaged the person $150, and a person damaged her $100, so the halacha is that the bala shor will pay the person the extra $50, the above and beyond. That's what it means over here. Aftam shechava ba'adam shalim b'mosar nezek shalim. So what the Gemara is suggesting over here is that Rabbi Oshia, if you really hold like Rabbi Akiva, then you should be including this distinction between a shor that damages a shar versus a shor that damages an adam. To which the Gemara says, Hatavre Rabbi Akiva legizei. So if you look at Rashi says over here, legizei, lekoach egrofo kidar mesenaj. Rabbi Akiva himself blunted this argument. Tisanya, Rabbi Akiva omer, af tam shechava ba'adam yishali min ha'aliyah. Rabbi Akiva says, I might have thought that even a tam that damages a person, or I should say, even a tam that damages a person should pay min ha'aliyah. And Rabbi said, now we spoke about this. Remember, min ha'aliyah means what? Well, first of all, look at Rashi. Yachli yishalim tam shechava ba'adam min ha'aliyah, tamud lomar, ve'ashtachach, Dilo mishalim nezek shalim ela kemo sha'ashor shava. And we'll say, remember we spoke about this idea already last week, this idea min ha'aliyah. Remember what min ha'aliyah means? That we're going to see that under certain cases of damages, so the amount of damages that the damaging party has to pay is capped at the value of the shor. So for example, if you a shor damages a person, the shor is worth $1,000, the maximum amount of damages that the bala shor could be chayiv for is $1,000. But we'll see again, there's the concept that when the shor damages a person, or shor damages in certain situations, is what's called min ha'aliyah. Min ha'aliyah means that if there are excess damages above and beyond the value of the shor itself, that the owner will be chayiv for that. So Rabbi Kiva says, I might have thought, yachal af tam shechava ba'adam yishalim min aliyah. I might have thought that even a tam that damages a person should have to go ahead and pay above and beyond the value of the shor. Tamad lomar, ya'aselo, migufo mishalim ve'ino mishalim min aliyah. Oh, so we'll say, even Rabbi Akiva holds that even a shor who damages a adam, who might have to pay nezek shalim, full damages, but even Rabbi Akiva agrees that what? That the value of the damages to be paid is capped at the value of the shor itself. Aye, what about ta'onis fa'mefata fa'motzi shemer demamonohu? So we'll say, so what about the following cases? Now this is actually quite an interesting statement. The Gemara says over here, what about the man who violates a woman, seduces a woman, motzi shemra? These are all cases of mamon. Listening, why doesn't Rabbi Oshia include them in his case, in his list? Look at Rashi for just a moment. Rashi says over here, ta'onis mefata demamonohu shechamishim kesef levad haviknas. So we'll say, remember, when we come to the cases of ones, mefata, motzi, shemra, so ultimately, again, there is the penalty payment, the penalty payment of 50 silver pieces. That's not what we're talking about over here. We're talking about in these cases, there are also other forms of damages that are paid. Those other forms of damages ultimately are called mamon. So Rabbi Oshia, why don't you include these cases in your list as well? To which the Gemara says, manavshach, inazek, tunneling. So we'll say, so let's analyze this, because Rabbi Oshia will say, look, if you call this nezek, then ultimately, again, it's included in Rabbi Oshia's other cases. Eat sar, tunneling. And if it's called sar, then Rabbi Oshia spoke about sar as well, meaning sar, remember, is money for pain and suffering. Eboshas, if it's the payment for humiliation, tunneling. Rabbi Oshia had that in his list. Epigam, if it's depreciation, hainu nezek, then that's included in the category of nezek. Ma is l'chol neimar. So Rabbi Oshia, so remember, what the Gemara is suggesting over here is, remember, in Rabbi Oshia's listing, Rabbi Oshia spoke about, tsar and boshes and pigam and nezek. So if you want to say that in the cases of ones mefata motzi shemra, that there are these other monetary payments, Rabbi Oshia included them, he just didn't call them by those names. So what's the only payment that Rabbi Oshia did not include in his list? Elamais l'chol neimar, kinasa. So Rabbi Oshia, the only payment that Rabbi Oshia did not include in his list was what? Was the 50 silver pieces. Aye, but what is that? What is that? That's a kinas, and b'kinas lo kamayri. And Rabbi Oshia himself is not involving himself in discussions about kinas. So Rabbi Oshia, the Gemara goes right. So Rabbi Oshia, understand what we're doing over here. What we're trying to figure out is the following. Comes along Rabbi Chiya and adds on another 11 cases to the 13 cases, ultimately, to the 13 cases of Rabbi Oshia. We're just trying to figure out why Rabbi Oshia did not include the cases of Rabbi Chiya. To which the Gemara seems to give a simple answer, which is that the cases of Rabbi Oshia included cases of Knas. The case of Rabbi Chiya, thank you. Rabbi Chiya included cases of Knas, and Rabbi Oshia himself is not including Knas cases. Rabbi Oshia is only coming to speak about cases of what we call of mamon, monetary damages. So Rabbi Oshia, so here's what's interesting, is remember, Rabbi Oshia and Rabbi Chiya are not arguing in terms of which cases you're chayef for, which cases you're pater for. That's not what they're arguing about. They would agree in terms of what you're chayef for. What they're arguing is in terms of classifications. So Rabbi Oshia comes along and says, I want to tell you the avos nezikin. I want to tell you the primary categories of damages. Rabbi Oshia understands that statement to be limited to cases of mamon. Rabbi Chiya apparently understands that those cases could come to include what? Cases of Knas as well. So Mar is continuing going. Next, Hametame Vamedame Vamanase Demamonu. Listening, so why don't we include the cases? Well, say somebody is Metame his friend's produce, or somebody mixes in Truma to his friend's Chulin produce, or Menasek Sla makes his friend's wine Yayin Nesech. So I'll say all of these cases are Mamon. So why don't we include these cases as well? So it says, take a look at Rashi for just a moment. Rashi says, medame me'arif truma im chulin shel chavero da'ashta mazbin le'bezol l'fi shena yachala ochlo elech kein. So we'll say, listen to this. So remember, the halacha is, let's play this out. You go ahead and you're metame your friends. I go over to my friend's produce. I mean, understand, like in the times of the Tazbeis Mishnah, like if you wanted to give somebody a big shtach, and this is what you would do, right? You would bring over your sheretz. I'm not giving any ideas, but just like you bring over your sheretz and you go ahead and you plop it down on their pile of grain. The Rebbe says, so what does that do? It makes it tamei. Now, what's the net effect of making produce tamei? What's the net effect, the Rebbe says? So, first of all, remember, if you make chulin tamei, a Yisrael, if I'm a Yisrael, I can still eat that, except we know that there are Yisraelim who are makbid to eat their chulin betara, to even eat their unconsecrated produce in ritual purity. So, what would you do with tamei produce? What would you do with it?
Sell it.
You would sell it. Now, who's the market for tamei produce? Who's the market? Tamei people. Right? So understand what the Gemara is suggesting over here. Same idea with medame. I take my friend. I'm angry at my next neighbor who is a Kohen. Well, actually, that's not a good case. I'm angry at my next neighbor who is Yisrael. I drop in. I sprinkle in some truma into his pile of grain. So again, what could I do with that? I could sell it to a Kohen, but again, I'm going to have to sell it at a reduced price. Yayin nesach. I'll say, what happens if I make my friends wine into an idolatrous libation? So we'll say, in that case over there, he can't do anything with it because Yayin Esach is Aser Bana. What the Gemara is suggesting over here is these are cases of Mammon. Why are these cases of Mammon? Because we'll say, these are cases of quantifiable damages. When I could quantify the amount of money that my friend could have sold his chulin for, had there not been truma mixed in, and now the amount that he has to sell his truma for, now that there is truma mixed in, same thing with yayin nesach, all of these things. So says the Gemara, these are cases of mamo, these are cases of real financial damage. If that's the case, Raboshia, why don't you include it in this list? To which the Gemara says, so maybe you'll say, I'm sorry, listening. So why don't you include, Rabbi Oshia, why don't you include these in your list? Let's analyze this. So watch this. If you hold that unrecognizable damage is called damage. Rabbi Oshia, remember, we learned these cases before. I must say, you know, the exciting part is, in general, you know that by this point in time in our journey through Shas, just you should feel a sense of accomplishment. So we've pretty much seen everything. We've seen, I don't mean that we remember it, right, or that we understand it, but at least we've seen it. So what's interesting is that, remember, there are actually, it's very beautiful. If you think about it, there are no new concepts that we're going to come across at this point in time and say, wow, I never heard of that idea before. Baruch Hashem, at this point in time, halfway through Shas, more than halfway through Shas, we've pretty much seen or heard about everything. So we've learned this concept before. We know that there's a fundamental machlokes about Hezek She'eno Nikar. Remember, what's a classic case of Hezek? Classic case of Hezek is, I go outside to the parking lot, I go over to Reuven's car, I slash his tires. That's Hezek. That's Hezek. It's recognizable damage. Hezek Shein Nikar means unrecognizable damage. We'll say, remember, if I go over to my friend's wine and I make it Yayin Nesach, is there any observable difference in the wine? No. You just throw in some truma into your friend's produce. Any recognizable difference? No. These are called, so remember, this is Machlokes. And there are those who say, Hezek She'eno Nikar Lo Shmei Hezek. That's not called damage. Now, we don't paskin that way. We paskin that Hezek She'eno Nikar is Shmei Hezek. The Gemara says, okay, so I don't understand. So this is quantifiable damage. So Rav Oshia, why don't you include these cases in your list? To which the Gemara says, well, let's analyze this. Manav Shach. E Hezek She'eno Nikar Shmei Hezek. So if you hold that unrecognizable damage is called damage, so Rav Oshia did include it. Ha Tanilei Nezek. So both say, remember, Rav Oshia did include it. Rav Oshia just called it what? He just called it Nezek. So remember, in Rav Oshia's model, he has a category called Nezek. And what's included in Nezek? Right? All forms of damages, including Hezek She'eno Nikar. In Hezek She'eno Nikar, Lo Shmei Hezek. And if you hold that unrecognizable damage is not called damage, Havilei Knasa, then it's called the Knas. And what? Ubi Knasa Lo Kamairi. Rav Oshia does not include Knas. He's not including Knas in his listing. So Lema Kasar Rav Chia. So let's analyze this. Maybe Rav Chia holds Hezek She'eno Nikar, Lo Shmei Hezek. Maybe Rav Chia actually holds that unrecognizable damage is not called Hezek. The Ish Me Hezek Hatanavei Nezek. So we'll say, could very well be that Rav Chia himself holds. The fact that Rav Chia goes out of his way to include these cases must mean what? Must mean what Rav Chia holds that Hezek She'eno Nikr, lo follow this for just a moment. Reb Chiya must hold that Hezek She'eno Nikr, lo Shmei Hezek, unrecognizable damage is not what? Is not called damage, and therefore again, that's Reb Chiya holds. That all of these cases need to be specified specifically, right? Medame, metame, menasech. Because again, if he owed hezek shenoniker shmei hezek, then what? Then what? He would not need to state them specifically. Why? Because they would already be included under the nezek of Reb Oshia. The fact that Reb Chiya feels the need to articulate these items independently tells us that he holds that they're hezek shenoniker, and yet he holds hezek shenoniker as lo shmei hezek, and therefore again the penalty payment is not the financial payment is not a mamon payment, but rather what? It's a kenas payment. Amazing. Says the Gemara, Tana hezek de minkara, v'tana hezek de lo minkara. Well, you could say that lemaisa. No, Reb Chiya, it could be that Reb Chiya still holds that hezek shenoniker is shmei hezek. If that's the case, then why would he state them separately? Why would they not be included under the category of Hezek? To which Reb Chiya might want to break it out. He wants to break out into two categories. What are the two categories? Rabbi say Hezek de Minkara, recognizable damage, and unrecognizable damage. So the point the Gemara is making over here is, see, let's say it's very tempting. Right? You feel the pull. You feel the strong pull to go ahead and make a machlokes between Reb Chiya and Reb Oshia. And maybe to say that their fundamental dispute is about Hezek Shteno Nikr. Maybe that's what's happening, right? That's what your kishkas are telling you to do. We have to fight against that. So, right, the natural inclination is to say Reb Oshia holds Hezek Shteno Nikr Shmei Hezek, and therefore he puts everything under the umbrella, whereas Reb Chiya is saying, no, Hezek Sheinika lo Shmei Hezek. And therefore the penalty payments are a Knas, and Reb Oshia is holding that therefore I am reckoning Knas in my category, to which the Gemara says, maybe not. Maybe at the end of the day, that's not the way it's happening. Reb Chiya also holds Hezek Sheino Nikar is Shmei Hezek, but he's choosing to go ahead and articulate both categories, recognizable damage, unrecognizable damage. Bishlam al-Tana didon, Tana minyona. So we'll say, let's finish this up. So the Gemara says, according to our Tana, we understand Tana minyona le-me'ute de Reb Oshia. So we'll say, now here's what we have. We now have four different counts of the Avos Nezikin. Of the primary categories of damages. We have our Mishnah, which gave us how many?
Four.
We have Reb Oshia, who gave us?
13.
And Reb Chiya, who gave us? 24. Right? So he includes Reb Oshia's plus an additional amount, 24. Says the Yimara, okay. Now, we will say another thing we also know through our extensive journeys through Shas. We've been through a lot together. I'm saying, like, if you think about it, Baruch Hashem. So understand, whenever there's a number, numbers always come to exclude something. So whenever the Mishnah of the Braisa says X number of items, that number is always coming to say these and not others. So the Gemara says, Bishlam al-Tana didan. So I understand in our Mishnah, and our Mishnah says, Arba avos nezikin. So Tana minyona lemi'uti de Reb Oshia. So our Mishnah, Reb Oshia, is coming to exclude the categories of Reb Oshia. Furthermore, but Reb Oshia Tana minyona lemi'uti de Reb Chiya. And also Reb Oshia says that there are 13 categories, right? His 13 categories are what? Coming to exclude the categories of Reb Chiya. Hello. Binyona de Reb Chiya lemi'uti mai. So Reb Oshia, see, here's what's interesting. So Reb Chiya, however, remember, has 24 different categories. So if Reb Chiya has 24 different categories, then the Maisa, again, what is he coming to exclude? Meaning Reb Chiya seems to be all-inclusive, because Reb Chiya, remember, is including Mamon, Reb Chiya is including Knas, Reb Chiya is including everything. So what does his number come to include? To which the Gemara says, L'me'ute Moser Umefagel. Now, Bosse, this is interesting. What's the case of Moser? So, Bosse, look at Rashi. Moser, it's like about 10 lines up from before the lines get wide. Moser, Malshin. Now, Bosse, Moser means Mamsha Moser. What's a Moser? Someone who goes ahead. Moser means Malshin Shemoser Mamon Chaver La'ovei Kochavim. He literally gives over. He speaks to the Gentile authorities and ultimately causes his neighbor Allah. So I'll say, I want to be clear on something, because this lashon of Moser, this kind of Moser, is often misunderstood. Moser, for example, you know, people say, and it's a horrible, horrible application, that when you see people say that if there's a Jew breaking the law, you're not allowed to call the authorities because it's Mesira. Unequivocally untrue. Unequivocally false. The concept of Moser is dafka, a concept by corrupt and unjust governments, where there was a concern that ultimately, again, the government would abuse and take advantage of the Jew. So the post can bring down that in democratic countries where there's a legal system, if somebody's doing something wrong, you have absolutely every single right to call the authorities. Now, granted, one should ask a shayla, one should understand the difference, where there's pikuach nefesh, and again, this is a good opportunity to enforce these points, where there's a pikuach nefesh situation, like chas v'shalom abuse or something else like that, it goes without saying that a person does, of course, not even a shayla. In other situations, monetary situations, so a person has to go ahead and discuss those things as well. But again, that's not what Mesira means. So it's very often misunderstood, and there's a misapplication of it. Moser in this concept means handing over a Jew to an unjust government who's going to chas v'shalom take advantage of them and ruin them. So we'll say, so listen to this. So the Gemara is suggesting over here that Moser means what? That Moser refers to, that Reb Chiya's count comes to include the case of Moser and Mefagel. Mefagel means, Rashi says, Kohen sheshachat karbanon shal Yisrael, chatos, l'shum shlamim, deina karban ol l'chovet. So we'll say, listen to this. What's pigul? Pigul means a Kohen has in mind when he's offering up the karban, to eat the karban, or to offer the karban, or really to eat the karban outside of its permitted window. So if a Kohen does that, then what happens? He renders the karban unfit. Now we'll say, now what's the common denominator between Moser and Mefagel? So we'll say, in Moser, remember, I'm handing over the Jew to the Gentile government, but Lamaisa, again, I'm not the one directly causing him the damages, it's more of a grumma. As a pigul, same thing. At the end of the day, I'm causing the damage, but again, it's a more indirect case. So the Gemara is suggesting that Reb Chiya's count comes to exclude Moser and pigul. So the Gemara says, well, listen, I don't understand. Why don't we include the cases of Moser and pigul and Reb Chiya's count? Meaning, both say, Reb Chiya seemed to include every other case in his count, so why don't we include these cases as well? Bishlam and Mefagel Bekachem Lo Kamari. So I understand why Reb Chiya doesn't include pigul. That makes sense. Why? Because at the end of the day, so Reb Chiya is not talking about kachem. That's not my kachem. You can easily say it's not talking about sacrificial cases. Ella Moser, my time alo. But why doesn't he include the case of Moser? Right? Why doesn't he go ahead and include the case of Moser in his categories? To which the Gemara says, my time alo. Tani, so the Gemara, my time alo, Tani. Shiny Moser, didibura. Ubidibura lo kamari. Kazabo say, what is Moser? Moser is just dibur. Right? A Jew goes ahead and informs on his fellow Jew to the Gentile, corrupt Gentile authorities. So that's just dibur. That's just speech. And at the end of the day, again, Reb Chiya is not dealing with speech. Is that true? V'hamotzi shemra didiburuhu v'katani. But Reb Chiya did include a case of speech. What's the case of motzi shemra? Man gets married. Right there after the wedding, he shows up in Beis Din. And what does he say? My wife was in a basula. She wasn't a basula, so he's claiming that ultimately, again, either that she committed adultery, or that ultimately it was a mekachtos, it was a flawed sale, so to speak, a union based on false pretenses. So that's dibur. Dibura de ispe maisohu. The Sigmar says, the difference is by motzi shemra. Motzi shemra is a dibur that has to be preceded by a maisa. What's the maisa? The maisa is the bia. Remember again, the case of motzi shemra never comes up if there's not relations. So ultimately, it's only if there's first bia that it could be motzi shemra. So dibur by itself, Reb Chiya is not counting. Remember, the case of mesira, Rabosai, is just a case of standalone dibur. There's no accompanying maisa, as opposed to motzi shemra, where what? There's first a maisa, then a dibur. But one second. V'ha'idim zomin, dibur de lespe maisa. What about idim zomin? Idim zomin is also a case of dibur. Because what happens in idim zomin? Witnesses gave false testimony. That's a case of just, and therefore again, a second set of witnesses say, how can you give that testimony? Imana Yisam, you are with us. That's a case of Dibor, and yet again, there's still obligation for Dibor, to which the Gemara says, Hasam afagav deles b'maisa rachmana kariyeh maisa. Suppose that, to which the Gemara answers, Edim Zomamin is the exception to the rule. Because Edim Zomamin, even though again there is no maisa, there is no action associated with it, nevertheless the Torah calls it a maisa. Dechsev v'asisem lo kasher zomim lasos lo achiv. So the Rabbos say, even though Edim Zomamin might not possess a maisa, nevertheless what? It's called the Maisa. Therefore, Berchia allows it to be included. So Bishlam Latana Didan, Tana Avos, Michlal Dikotodo, so we'll say, so now again, so now you're seeing, so first of all, you see everybody does have something they exclude. So the Tana of our Mishnah excludes Rabbi Oshia's cases, Rabbi Oshia excludes Rabbi Chia's cases, and Rabbi Chia leaves out the cases of Moser and Pigel. Pigel, I understand why he leaves out. Why? Kachim, because he's not dealing with Kachim. And the case of Moser leaves out. Why? Because it's Dibor, right? It's just Dibor with no Maisa, and Dibor with no Maisa he doesn't include. Moti Shemra is Dibor, but it has a Maisa. The only exception to that rule is Edim Zomimin, and the exception to that rule is why? Because the Torah itself calls that a Maisa, even though it's just a Dibor. Says the Yomar Bishlam Tana Didan Tana Avos Mechlal Dikatodos. So we'll say, let's analyze this. Our Tana of our Mishnah. Our Tana of our Mishnah. So what happens? He goes ahead and the Artana goes ahead and says Avos to infer from that there are Toldos. We infer from that both said that what? That there are subcategories. Ela l'Rabbi Chia v'Rabbi Oshia Avos Michlal Di'ika Toldos. Toldos say in Magnihu. Now listen, here's what's interesting. Now Rabbi Chia and Rabbi Oshia, or should Rabbi Oshia and Rabbi Chia use that same lashon of Avos, which seems to indicate that what? That there are Toldos as well. Now Rabbi Oshia, that sounds very strange to us. Why? Because they're each enumerating so many cases. Remember, Rabbi Chia is enumerating 13. Rabbi Oshia is enumerating 13. Rabbi Chia is enumerating 24. So they each have all of these cases. It seems to be unlikely that they have additional subcategories of cases. So if that's the case, again, at the end of the day, mind you, what additional cases do they have? Rabbi Avo, kulan ka'avos l'shalei mimeitov. Oh, Rabbi Osa, here's the interesting idea. Says the Gemara, that when Rabbi Oshia and Rabbi Chia speak about Avos, what they mean is the following. They mean that all of the categories are treated like Avos, namely, that they all have to pay mimeitov from the best of the damager's property. Now, Bosa, and I will discuss, we have not gotten into yet a discussion about what you pay. We've discussed a little bit tangentially what you pay, but we'll see the next discussion is how you pay, or better stated, what you pay from. The Gemara is suggesting over here that when our Tana says Avos, our Tana uses that word, why? To teach us that not only are there Avos primary categories, but there are also Toldos subcategories. When Rabbi Oshia and Rabbi Chia use the word Avos, they don't mean to infer that there are Toldos. In their model, in their concept, there are no Toldos, because they're stating all of the cases explicitly. When they say Avos, what they're trying to say is all of these cases that they're quoting are all like Avos. What does that mean? That just like in the primary categories, you have to pay me Meitov from the best property of the damager, so too in all of the cases, you have to pay from the best property of the damager. My Taima, what's the reason? Rabbi say Asya, Nesina, excuse me, Asya Tachos, Nesina, Yeshalim, Kesa. Because Rabbi say, as we're going to see, there is a mega gezeirah shava that is made. This is a gezeirah shava that's comprised of four different words: tachos, nesina, yishalim, kasef. Will the Mir Tashem see that? We will learn that gezeirah shava in greater depth. For now, suffice it to say that the halacha is that there is a gezeirah shava that links them all together, and therefore, according to Rabbi Chia and Rabbi Oshia, the Avos comes to teach you that I pay from the best of the property. Lo hari ashar kahari amada. So let's finish. So the Gemara says, remember, this is just pointing from the Mishnah, that the shar, that the, as much as the Gemara links all of the Avos together, right? Remember again, the Mishnah mentioned them all together, one breath. Shar, bar, mava, hever. So remember, now we know what they are. Shar is the ox that gores, or again, not only gores, but ultimately negicha, negifa. Bar is the pit. Mava, machlokis, rabin, shmuel. It bless you. Is it shener? Is it adam? Hever, eish. So the Gemara says, remember, then the Mishnah said that they're not like each other. Lo hari ashar kari amava. So for example, the Mishnah said that the shar is like the mava. My ka'amar. So why does the Mishnah need to say this? Why does the Mishnah say that one is not like the other? To which the Gemara says, amrav zid, mishmei dirava, hachi kamar, lichtov rach. What the Mishnah is trying to preempt is the following. I might have thought that all we really need to do is what? Just quote or mention, let the Torah just mention one category of damages, and I could have what? Learned everything else out from that category of damages. Therefore, the Gemara says, therefore, when the Mishnah goes ahead and essentially says that these four categories, as much as we're lumping them together, one is not like the other, is teaching us that the Torah could not have learned out one from the other, and therefore what? Therefore the Torah needs to state each of them independently and explicitly. For example, the Mishnah said that Shor and Mada, so which have Ruach Haim, which have life in them, are not like the others. This is what it means to say, Lichtov. So I know you see a daf like this, you say, you schmacking over base like this. Don't get excited, by the way, right? We'll finish it in time, but it's not as easy as it looks. Lichtov, Rachmona, so says the Gemara like this. When I was preparing it at 11:30 last night, I also said, Baruch Hashem. And then I saw it wasn't so posh. So says the Gemara, Hachikar, this is what it means to say. Lichtov, Rachmona, Tarti, Vitisi, Idach. I might have thought the following. Let the Torah just write Shor and Mada. Let the Torah just teach me Shor, which I will say again, remember, means the cases of an ox, of an animal that does damages, and all the various different ways that we see it. Remember, we saw that Shor itself, the Shor, which is the Av, has multiple sub-avos. Meaning, remember, even before you get to the toldos, Shor itself has multiple sub-avos. So let's learn out from Shor and Mada. Remember again, Machlokis Rav and Shmuel, either Adam or Shane. So let's learn out from Shor and Mada, Vitisi Idach. And let's learn from those two, Keren and Esh. Right? Let's learn from those two, ultimately Keren and Esh. So the Gemara says, Vitisi Idach Minayu, Hadar Amar, Chadami Tarti Lo Asi. To which the Gemara says, no, again, what the Mishnah is essentially telling me is, you can't learn out one even from two. Amar Rava, so the point the Gemara is making is, we're not going to get into, you'll see, we'll get into a little bit more depth in just a moment. The point the Gemara is going through the exercise of trying to figure out, why does the Torah need to state all of the Arba Avos separately, independently, and explicitly? Why not go ahead and essentially state one of them and learn out? So Gemara already said, if it's just stated one, I can't learn out the others. So now we'll say the next step is, let it just state two, and I can learn everything else from that. To which the Gemara says, no, that won't work as well. Amar Rava, but Rava says, however, the kulu kishadis bar beinayu asya kulu b'matzad lebar mikaren. So let's listen to this. Rava does, however, if you were to go ahead and take bar and any one of the other remaining three, you would be able to learn the remainder of the avos from them. Now look at Rashi for just a moment. Rashi says kishadis bar beinayu asya. Look at Rashi says. Iksiv bar v'chadami hanach. Had the Torah just taught me bar, which is pit, damages of a pit, and any one of the other three, I could have learned out the remaining two from those first two. So for example, so iksiv bar v'chadami hanach. Had the Torah taught me bar and one of the other cases, asya kulhu me'ahu me'idach. All of the other two, the other two could have been learned out from bar and the other one. B'tzada shava. B'tzada shava means the kamdinam neder. Diksiv bar, let's analyze this. Watch this. Diksiv bar v'karen. Let's say they had the Torah just written bar and karen. Had the Torah just written the damages of a pit and karen, which means the goring of an ox. I could have learned out asya shein minahu. I could have, for example, learned out shein, which is, remember, is damages that an animal does through any pleasure-seeking activity. I could have learned out shein from those two. Why? So the Gemara says hachi ma bar shein darko lelechu lahazik chayiv. Because bar, bar is stationary, it does not move and do damages, and yet you're chayiv. Shein shedarko leilech ulahazik lakol shekein. So bar, which is stationary, does damages, you're chayiv for. Shein, which is a movable form of hezek, a mobile form of hezek, certainly should be chayiv. But 1 second, ma le bar shekein tchilas asiyah, so omi le nezek. But yet again, when it comes to bar, I will say, a bar is something that damages from its very inception. Tomar b'shein, yet by shein avos, say shein does not mean the shein activities of an animal are not inherently damaging. So both say, on that respect, so shein is not going to be like bar. On the other hand, keren yochiach, because both say, keren ultimately from its inception is what? is inherently a damaging force. Malik Karen Shekin Kavanos Alahazik. But on the other hand, Karen ultimately again, the Kavan is to do damages. Bar Yochiach. So Bar could take care of that because Bar's intention is not to damage. And therefore, the Chazra Adin, Hatzal Hashem Shem, we'll say, so what is the common denominator ultimately between Bar and between Karen and between Shane? Shadarkan Lahazik. Each of them have the capacity to damage umamoncha, and they are your property ushmirasam alecha, and it's your responsibility to guard them. Afani avi shein v'chein regel mikeren ubar dechi parachta malaborshkin tchasas. So what do you see? What you see from this, right? This is amazing. What Rav is suggesting is what you could have done is if you have bar and any one of the other three, you could have learned out the other two from bar. And that second one, meaning Bar and any of the other, he's using an example over here, Bar and Karen. So Bar and Karen could have created what we call a ma'atzad, or a tzad ha-shaveh, which is a kam denominator, and a kam denominator could have taught me liability by the remaining two as well. To which the Gemara says, so Amar Rava, v'kulu ki shadis bar b'nayo asya kulu b'ma'atzad, lebar mi Karen, with the exception of Karen. Why? Mishom di'ikala mifrach, because they both say Karen has something unique that could not be learned out from anything else. Malakulu shekein mu'adin mitchilasan. Because they both say, here's what's interesting. Karen, as we've seen already, has a unique quality, which is, and they both say, this seems to be a little bit of an anomaly, which we'll discuss. Karen, on one hand, is kavanas olahazik. Right? Karen is the type of damage where the intent to damage was there from the beginning. Yet, we know what's talocha by Karen. If one shar gores another shar, what's talocha rabosai? Chatzi nezek. For the first three times that happens, there's only chatzi nezek, and only fourth time around is there nezek shalom. Yet, by all of the other damages, by all the other avos, talocha is what? Nezek shalom from the beginning. Now, we're going to see that's just a gzeresek, it's just a pasuk. So what the Gemara just pointed out, what Rav says is, you could have made a mat, you could have made a tzad shavakam denominator from Bar and any of the other three, and that could have learned out the rest of them, with the exception of Karen. Because Karen is unique, because you're only paying chatzi nezek from the beginning. Ulaman darmer adirabo, Karen adifa, shekhavan asa lahazik, afilu Karen nami asya. So we'll say, but according to the mandarim who says that no, all the more so Karen could have been learned that from the Mahatzad. Why? Because Lamaisa, Karen Abosai is the most obvious of all of the avos. Why? Because Abosai, Karen is the case of kavana to do damage. Remember, the other cases of avos nezikin are not cases of intention filled hezek. Karen is, if that's the case. El Lamai Hilchasa. So according to Rava, technically speaking, you could have learned out the four from two. In other words, had the Torah told me bar and one other one, I could have learned out the remaining two. But then that's not really true, says the Gemara. Why? Because Karen would need its own limud. Why does Karen need its own limud? Because of chatzi nezek, because you only pay half damages for the first couple of times you damage. But according to the Mandarim, who says, no, all the more so Karen could have been learned out. Because even though it has that chatzi nezek issue, it's kavanas olahazik, its intention is to damage. So now we're really left with the fundamental kasha, which is, so why does the Torah? So therefore, according to that, you really could have learned out everything. Could have learned out four from two. If that's the case, then why does the Torah explicitly state the arba avos nezikin? Remember, we saw this already on Thursday, that there's a specific pasuk from which we learn out shar, bar, mave, and hever. Why is there a specific pasuk to teach me each of the arba avos nezikin? If technically speaking, as long as it said bar and one other, I could have learned out the remaining two. To which the Gemara says, I'll tell you. Here we go. Karen lechalik bein tamal mu'ada. So we'll say because the Torah needed to state all four of the arba avos nezikin. Because each one of the avos nezikin has a special and unique quality. So the Torah had to state keren, which is damage is done, again, by the body of the animal. Why? Lechalik bein tama lemuedes. To teach me a distinction between a tam and a muad. Right? That a tam only pays chatzi nezek versus a muad that pays complete nezek. Shein v'regel. Why does the Torah have to teach me shein and regel? Shein Rabos, remember, refers to damages done by the animal through some type of pleasure-seeking activity. Regel represents damages b'derech hilucho, in the way the animal just normally walks. Why do I need those to be taught to me? The poacher on Bishasam, so we're going to see this is quite fascinating, that if an animal damages through shein or regel in the public domain, the bal hashar, the owner of the animal, is pata from damages. So you're only chayiv ultimately for damages of shein and regel if they are committed ultimately again bershus hanizak in the reshus, in the property of the damaged party. But if they take place in reshus harabim, the bala shor is pater. Bar, why does the Torah state bar? Liftar bo es hakelim, to go ahead and exempt the owner of the bar from kelim. In other words, we'll say, interestingly enough, we will learn that if the bar damages utensils, the owner of the pit is exempt from damages. You're only going to be chayiv for damages done to what? Done to an animal, but not done to kelim. Again, we'll discuss all of these in depth. And according to Rabbi Yehuda, who ultimately says no, that you're chayiv even if the bar damages utensils, then why does the Torah state bar specifically? Liftar boas ha'adam. We're going to see that according to Rabbi Yehuda, that if a person falls into my bar and gets damaged like that, that I am exempt, according to Rabbi Yehuda, for damages done to a person in a bar. Next. Uliftar boas ha'adam. Adam, why does the Torah have to state Adam? Rabbi Yosai, again, at least according to one opinion, that's the case of Mave. L'chaivo ba'arbet dvarm. The teaching of Rabbi Yosai that when you go ahead, when one person damages another, there are four different categories of damages that the person has to repay. Eish, why does the Torah have to specifically mention Eish? Rabbi Yosai, we're going to spend a lot of time on this. L'chaivo bo'es ha'tamun. To go ahead, Rabbi Yosai, we're going to see that by Eish, there is an opinion that says that you're only chayiv for damage that your fire causes to things that were visible. But hidden objects, if the fire goes ahead and damages them, I'm not going to be chayiv for that. We'll say again, we're going to spend a lot of time on each of these things. And the current Rabbi Yehuda who says that you're chayiv even for hidden things, so ba'ish la'asuye, my, ultimately again, so what does Eish come to include? Meaning, why is Eish stated? Rabbi Yehuda, tap of staff vav, la'asuye, lich kamiro, to teach me that in a case where, let's say, the fire spreads and goes into my friend's field and singes his dirt, singes the earth, or scorches rocks, then halacha lemaisa, I'm going to be chayiv for that azad. In other words, that under normal circumstances, fire doesn't really harm earth, and fire doesn't really harm stones. But if it turns out, if you look at Rashi, which is Mom, Rashi says, La'asui lichka niro, shim lichka ha'esh charishaso shachavero, o sichsecha avanav, that if my fire singes my friend's earth, or scorches his stones, chayiv, ba'avonim shayach lashom, sichsech shalom, nisifu legamre, elash sischa. So what the Gemara says over here, and again, we'll get into greater depth with this, if you skip down a little bit, Rashi says over here, behind nafkalon dehasam, so we'll say, even though the regular case of Eish is really a case where what? Is really a case where the Eish is burning, destroying objects, but even if the Eish singes the earth or scorches the rocks, there will be damages to be paid for that as well. So we'll say, we'll stop with a bottom line, aloha, and I says, so what comes out? Meaning, it's important that every day we have some kind of takeaway. So remember, what we come over here, first of all, is we see that there are three different ways of keeping track of the Avos Nezikin. We have our Mishnah, which has four. We have Rabbi Oshia, who has 13. And we have Rabbi Chiya, who has 24. Our Mishnah, which has four, has Avos and Toldos. It appears that Rabbi Chiya and Rabbi Oshia ultimately, again, don't really have Toldos. They just lump everything into Avos. Our Mishnah gives a number to exclude Rabbi Oshia. Rabbi Oshia gives a number to exclude Reb Chiya. Reb Chiya gives a number to exclude two cases. Number one, the case of Pigel. And again, he excludes that case because he's not dealing with Kachin. And to exclude what? The case of Moser. Why does he exclude the case of Moser? Because Reb Chiya will ultimately say what? That damage generated solely by Dibor is not included in the Avos Nezikin. Right? Whether or not Tichai for that, we'll discuss. But it's not including the Avos Nezikin. What about Zomamin? Zomin is the exception. Why? Why? Because the Torah calls that a Maisa. Another sub-machlokes Rabbi said that the Gemara kind of touched on. It's like a tease. It whet our appetite for it a little bit, but it didn't really go into it enough. It's a good thing it's Sunday. You have more time to get into this. So again, the one piece that the Gemara dangled in front of us was Hezek, Sheno Nikar, Shmei Hezek, Lo Shmei Hezek. So remember again, unrecognizable damage. Is it called Hezek? Is it not called Hezek? So the Gemara tried to frame that as a machlokes in Rabbi Chiya and Rabbi Oshia. In the end, that didn't work. It could be that they're exactly on the same page about that. But again, for a variety of different reasons, they choose to tabulate different numbers of cases. We then saw again, bottom line, the Gemara taught us, is that again, although it would have been tempting to learn all of the cases of Hezek from one primary case of Hezek, we can't do that because each of the different Avos Nezikin each have their own unique aspects. Therefore, again, the Torah has to state each of them explicitly. The Torah, the Gemara then ends off by telling us that the reason you have to state each of the Arba Avos Nezikin explicitly is why? Because each of them has their own unique features. So for example, we don't have to go through all of them again, but each of them have their own unique features. Each of them have something specific, each of them have something unique, and therefore again, the Torah felt the need to state each of them explicitly and separately. Let me just end off with one just quick thought on Yom Yerushalayim.